Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith.
If this is not a humanitarian tragedy, what is?
Hanna Anbar of the Daily Star of Beirut, Lebanon, joins us today as we take another look at the politics of war and crisis. We begin with Democrat Joe Courtney, who is in a rigorous campaign for the 2nd District congressional seat in Connecticut. His opponent, Republican Rob Simmons, was one of those who came to the president's aid on the question of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Residents of the 2nd District remember former CIA agent Simmons standing before Connecticut audiences claiming to have seen secret documents on Iraq's WMDs. They were later proven to have been fake, and Connecticut anti-war activists have come on strong this year in support of Joe Courtney. We caught up with him at the Third Thursday Street Festival in Willimantic, July 20th, where the streets were crammed with people enjoying food and listening to bands.
This event is just so impressive how it's grown, and it's just nice to see a gathering of all these towns, people from all over the place showing up for a city that really is working hard to make a strong comeback, and this shows that people are believing it.
Now, this is your 2nd district.
Yes.
Talk about what kinds of things you'd like to see happen for towns like Willimantic that are searching for economic initiatives.
Well, first of all, I think as a nation, we really have got to address problems like our high energy costs and health care costs, which really, I think, hit New England and the Northeast very hard. And, again, you look at all these budgets and towns in this area. I mean, one of the biggest cost drivers is the cost of energy. And, we've got a Congress right now that's just completely disconnected in terms of that issue. The oil companies have way too much control down in Washington. And that's one of the big differences between my opponent and I, Rob Simmons. But I also think that, we need to have different priorities in Washington in terms of where our budgets go. As long as we're giving tax cuts to oil companies in the top 1%, there's never going to be enough resources to address the challenges of communities like Wyndham. My wife, Audrey, is a pediatric nurse practitioner who works at the Wyndham Middle School. And, she tells me every day over the dinner table about the struggles children coming from families in Willimantic face. And they obviously are not being, those priorities are not being represented in Washington today.
Now, speaking of Washington,
yes.
Attention is turned to Washington, but also turned internationally to the Middle East. And I know your opponent, Rob Simmons, has been outspoken from the start about the war in Iraq.
Yes.
Let's start there. And
yep.
You disagree with Rob Simmons. Talk about the kinds of things that have come up in the campaign and how you think you're doing on that issue.
Right. Well, first of all, one of the biggest problems in Washington is the fact that we've had a Congress which has completely failed its constitutional duty to, as a co-equal branch of government, to hold this administration accountable for all of the missteps, misuse of intelligence, inadequate troop strength, no exit plan, single-source contracts that have ripped off the taxpayers and put our men and women in uniform at risk. And throughout all of that experience over the last 4 years, not a peep out of the Congress. So number one, we need to have a different type of representation that's prepared to hold people accountable for all of the mistakes and mishaps that's occurred there. Secondly, in June, there was a phony debate in Washington on Iraq where the Republican leadership, using our troops as sort of a shield, did push through this resolution that basically endorsed Bush's stay-the-course policy. And at the end of the day, Rob Simmons lined up with his leadership in support of that. I strongly disagree with that vote that he took. I think it's so out of sync with what the people of the 2nd District are looking for. The war in Iraq is something that people are very upset about. $250 million a day being spent over there, while cities like Willimantic are struggling to get education budgets and cutting school sports. There's just, instance after instance where the priorities are completely out of sync because of his lockstep support for the Bush administration and its misguided policies in Iraq.
Now, do you see that we are headed in any kind of specific direction you can discern when it comes to Lebanon and what's happening with Israel in the Middle East? Do you get the sense that this is moving in a direction? And if so, what are your thoughts about that direction?
Well, clearly, once again, we've had an administration that for 5.5 years has basically sat out the conflict in Israel and Palestine. And Dennis Ross, who was the Middle East envoy under the Clinton administration, issued a statement the other day that we're seeing really the fruits of that neglect in terms of the rising violence and conflict that exists there. The U.S., I believe, is the only country that can really lead a diplomatic effort that's desperately needed to stop the violence. And again, we've got a situation where the Congress is basically doing nothing to push this administration, the State Department, to step up and get involved, which I believe we know from experience is the only way you can get the parties talking to each other is through our own diplomatic intervention, not military intervention, but diplomatic intervention.
Thanks very much.
Okay. Yep, it's good to see you.
Democrat Joe Courtney is running for the 2nd District Congressional seat in Connecticut. U.S. Senate candidate Ned Lamont also made an appearance at Willimantic's Third Thursday. Lamont is running against Joe Lieberman, but he took time out from that contentious race to sit in with the Third Thursday band. His primary race will be held August 8th.
You want to run for the U.S. Senate, you do a lot of parades. I'll tell you, the hottest parade in the state is right next door, that boombox parade. Oh, yeah. I had my entire family there. There's something in the water. That place was cooking. And we were the last, group marching there. Tonight's going to be fun. As you probably heard, I'm going to be in Willimantic. I probably won't be talking about health care. I won't be talking about the war in Iraq. I won't be talking about investing in education. But I am going to be playing Imagine on the piano with a local group, which I can't wait to do. Just one thing, seriously, and then I'd love to take some questions. But, as I go around the state of Connecticut, meeting as many people as I can, especially in a Democratic primary, it's true that there are an awful lot of people that believe that George Bush is taking this country way off course. But I'll tell you something I hear even more. They want the Democrats to stand up and be bold and clear and offer a constructive alternative to the Bush agenda. Stop complaining.
Senatorial candidate Ned Lamont in Connecticut running against Joe Lieberman. His primary is August 8th. And we'll be hearing more from both Joe Courtney and Ned Lamont in upcoming broadcasts. Joe Courtney's calls for more diplomacy and more involvement from the U.S. State Department in negotiations are all the more relevant as Rome talks came to an abrupt end over refusals by U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice to help negotiate a ceasefire before Hezbollah was fully disarmed. As Lebanese PM Fouad Sanyora begged for the survival of his people, Rice held her ground. And so the IDF, Israeli Defense Force, will continue to bomb Lebanese cities and towns without an end date. The U.S. and Israel also rejected calls to include Hezbollah in Lebanon and the governments of Syria and Iran in any negotiations. The only agreements made thus far in the negotiations center on aid programs to be run by USAID and a reconstruction plan, yet both efforts will be stalled by Israel's ongoing bombing. UN sources remain uncertain about their ability to get through the country of Lebanon, as Israeli bombs have now killed 4 UN peacekeepers at an observation post in southern Lebanon. Their deaths come as the 3rd incident where U.S. representatives have been harmed by Israeli forces during the conflict. We spoke with Fahoun Haq, a spokesperson for Secretary General Kofi Annan, July 24th, as his office was preparing for the initial meetings with Secretary Condoleezza Rice that night. I asked him about who would make up an initial security force at Lebanon's southern border.
Well, I think that'll become more clear as the shape of this force emerges. What we need to do first is see what emerges out of tomorrow's discussions. See whether the gathered foreign ministers and other leaders who are there can come to something concrete about this, and hopefully then we can see what sort of support you'd get for an international force.
We've heard quite a bit about the humanitarian crisis now, largely coming out of the office of Jan Egeland at UN. Talk to us about where the Secretary General stands on the humanitarian crisis in terms of any possible contacts that he has made to either Israel or to the U.S.
Well, in terms of contacts, the Secretary General has been in touch with all of the major players. As I said, he'll be meeting with Secretary Rice this evening, in fact. and he has been in touch with Prime Minister Olmert and other officials in Israel, as well as the Prime Minister of Lebanon and others, other leaders in the region. He has made it clear that because of the tremendous and ruinous impact this conflict has had on civilians on all sides, what is essential is a cessation of hostilities. And he's been pressing all sides for a cessation of hostilities to be implemented as soon as possible. And so we'll have to see whether that can be achieved. But that is clearly essential. Meanwhile, Jan Egeland, who you just mentioned, is on the ground in the region. He visited Lebanon yesterday. Today he's been visiting the occupied Palestinian territories, and he will also be in northern Israel tomorrow, seeing all of the areas where damage has been done in various aspects of this conflict, whether by Israeli aerial bombardment, Hezbollah shelling, or through whichever actions. He, of course, is also echoing Mr. Annan's call for a cessation of hostilities, and he has also put together a humanitarian appeal for the next several months for Lebanon.
So the United Nations will be heading up the humanitarian appeal, or will there be a lead agency, an NGO?
Well, the group that's in the lead on this is the UN's Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, which is headed by Mr. Egeland.
Any news on whether or not it's going to be possible to get Israel to adhere to these safe corridors or to help in other ways to protect aid workers as they try to get to the victims in Lebanon?
Well, like I said, what the Secretary General, Mr. Annan, had been emphasizing is the need for the fighting to stop and for there to be a cessation of hostilities. That said, we are also working with the Israeli authorities to see whether there can be safe corridors so that we can get humanitarian aid to the people who need it. So there's been work on that, and we'll see over the course of the next day or so whether we can actually move aid along on corridors that on which we've had agreement for safety.
Finally, will there be discussion at these upcoming meetings with Condoleezza Rice and representatives of other countries about the kinds of weapons that are being used in Iraq? We've seen some reports that very heavy munitions are being used. Civilian casualties are, in some cases, coming in with very bad burns, and there are questions about things like white phosphorus use and cluster bomb use as well.
Yes, we have already expressed our concerns in recent days about the reported use of cluster munitions. And as for what's happening in the discussions, let's see what happens then.
We turn next to our interview with Hanna Anbar in Beirut, Lebanon. He's with the Daily Star newspaper, the only English-language newspaper in the country. Sir, what is the condition there tonight? I understand that Israeli warplanes are back after Condoleezza Rice has left the area.
Well, they're back with vengeance. They shelled again the south part of Beirut. I mean, the place is nearly deserted, but they're shelling empty buildings and just creating more devastation and destruction, but at the same time creating panic in the capital and in all the towns around the capital. The Israelis have warned the Lebanese that if any rocket hits Haifa, they're going to destroy 10 buildings in the suburbs of Beirut, and that's what they have done.
We keep hearing that the Israeli Defense Force is trying to target Hezbollah strongholds and that they're locating munitions and weapons and rocket launchers that are being hidden in people's homes. Can you comment on that, please?
There are no rockets in the suburbs of Beirut, ma'am. And there is no way you can target just Hezbollah. These areas have mixed residents there. There are people who don't even belong to the Shiite community. I mean, this thing about just singling out Hezbollah is a myth. There is no way you can single out just one sect in Lebanon. This is a country that has 18 sects living all over the country. I mean, how can you tell this guy is Hezbollah and this guy is not Hezbollah? There are no areas that say Hezbollah area, you know, non-Hezbollah area. This is cheap propaganda, and by now, you know, people should know. But what to do? I still get questions like that.
Who is asking you those kinds of questions? Is this from the people of Lebanon or from the foreign press?
No. We get these kinds of questions from the Western media, ma'am.
Yes. And does the Western media, as they are in your country now, are they representing the story well, do you think, or what are some of your suggestions for the Western press?
No, I think the Western media is getting much better. They are here now, and some of them have seen the damage themselves, and the reporting is much more balanced than the first 2-3 days.
And would you talk about that damage to the city of Beirut, Lebanon, a little bit more?
Well, I mean, the city is paralyzed, ma'am. We don't have an airport. We don't have a port. The business communities are just paralyzed. People have been evacuated. Other people have gone to the mountains. So there is no movement. I mean, you have areas that have been destroyed. You have the bridges around Beirut that have been destroyed. And plus the fact that, you know, we have a shortage of energy. I think in 1 week's time, we won't have any power. We have a shortage of medicine, and we have a shortage of foodstuffs. So, you know, you can imagine how the situation is.
What kinds of stories are you covering today? Have you been reporting on some of the munitions that are being used? Because we understand that the Israelis are using very heavy weapons, and in many cases there are accusations now that they're using white phosphorus and other kinds of rockets designed for bunker buster use and that kind of thing.
We have confirmation that they're using cluster bombs in the south. We're waiting for tests on phosphorus bombs, and Human Watch and Geneva Red Cross say that the Israelis are using weapons that are against the Geneva Conventions. Our reporters, to be honest with you, are no experts on this. So we have to go to experts, and most experts lead to the use of non-conventional weapons.
Tell me about the Daily Star. Is your activity going on regularly throughout the day? What's the condition at your office right now?
Oh, well, our office are operating as usual, and we are in the middle of town. We have problems distributing the paper outside Beirut, but, you know, we have found our ways of getting to our readers. You have to remember, this is the only English-language newspaper in the country, and we have had most of our readers evacuated. They're Americans, they're British, they're Canadians, they're Australians. You know, all these people have been evacuated, or most of them. So these are our readers. In fact, our readership has gone down, but we have a very successful website. We get something like 60 and 70,000 hits on days of action. But at the same time, the Daily Star publishes an Egyptian edition. We also publish a Kuwaiti edition, and we also print at the same time in Qatar. And from Qatar, we distribute to Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Bahrain. So our distribution outside Lebanon is as usual. But in Lebanon, like I told you, it's a matter of having no access to certain areas, plus the fact that most of our readers have gone.
We're hearing reports that the U.S., at least, would promote the idea of an international force at the border with Lebanon. Can you talk about that? I understand that at least two countries in the region that are Arab nations have offered to participate. Can you talk about that?
I don't think so. None of the Arab nations have offered to participate, ma'am. And, you know, the creation of such a force is still under consideration, and there are no hints that the United States will take part. And this is the problem. Unless the United States agrees to participate, there is no way you can have a NATO force come to Lebanon. So the other choice is to pick from some European countries and maybe Turkey, but none of the Arab nations has offered, and I don't think it's feasible for any of the Arab nations to come and be part of the United Nations force.
Now, about the meetings again with Rice in Beirut, Lebanon, was she there to send a message to the Lebanese government that, in fact, she wanted them to basically kick Hezbollah out of the country? And have you been hearing about that and also initiatives with the Syrians to promote the eradication of Hezbollah?
Well, the problem is that Mrs. Rice has asked the Lebanese government what the Lebanese government cannot do. If the whole might of the Israeli army cannot take care of Hezbollah, does she expect the Lebanese government that has an army that could be split in a few hours because on sectarian terms, does she expect that kind of army and that kind of government to be able to disarm Hezbollah? I mean, there is a limit to what the Lebanese government can do. We all want the Lebanese government to be capable of imposing law and order all over Lebanon. But Mrs. Rice, I'm sure, knows very well that the Lebanese government is not capable of doing this. So to ask the Lebanese government to do that is just, you know, parole.
So there's been a lot of rhetoric from the U.S. and also Israel, and a lot of the talk centers on the war on terror. Talk about where Lebanon fits in to the picture that the world has of the war on terror. And can you tell us, in your opinion, do you think Hezbollah has grown because of what the Bush administration has said and done since taking office, specifically in Iraq?
Well, no, the problem, you know, the problem that Hezbollah is talking about, it was way before the Iraq war started. You see, you cannot solve this problem by just looking at it at Hezbollah and prisoners here and prisoners there. There are roots for this problem. The roots of this problem are very well known to the U.S. administration. There is no country in the world that does not know the roots of this problem. The roots of this problem is there's some occupied land for Lebanon that by Israel. It's also the prisoners. It's also, we don't know where the mines are planted on Lebanese soil. And, you know, throughout the years, we have Israeli planes flying all over Lebanon. Nobody has ever objected to this from the Western countries. So there are lots of things to think about. The roots of this problem are way, way over and above the two prisoners. This is just a detail, believe me. You know, everybody has an agenda here. The Israelis have an agenda. The Palestinians have an agenda. Hezbollah has an agenda. The Syrians have an agenda. The Iranians have an agenda. And definitely the U.S. administration has an agenda. But none of these agendas seem are for the good of Lebanon. So whatever happens, whoever wants to impose their agenda, the Lebanon and the Lebanese are the ones who are suffering. You know, sometimes you really, and I don't want to be very emotional about this, I look at the people here and I just marvel at their resilience and, you know, their perseverance in a situation like this. The way they are helping each other, the way making do without power and so many things. Now, this is the problem. The problem is a humanitarian problem as far as the Lebanese are concerned, who are mostly civilians who just want to live in a democratic state and just live like every other country, raise their children, send them to school, and raise families. And they have been deprived of this over the past nearly 30 years.
Now, finally, tell us about the humanitarian aspects and what you're hearing. It seemed that the world reacted to Jan Egeland from the Humanitarian Department at the United Nations. The media reacted, and yet what we are hearing are denials from Israel that they're even responsible for civilian deaths. They're saying Hezbollah is responsible for all of the deaths. And from the West, we're seeing permission to continue on that's being given to Israel. So what can be done, do you think, to strengthen the voices that are calling for assistance for the humanitarian disaster and to help the Lebanese people?
There is no way to make people believe what they don't want to believe. What would you expect the Israelis to say? That they are the reason for this? We have nearly a million people who have been evacuated or thrown out of the southern parts of Lebanon. Now, are these Hezbollah? These people are civilians. They are living now in schools, in churches, in parks, taken as guests by families from the Druze, from the Christians, from the Sunnis. And these people have children, and they have pride, and they have their integrity. And the government is got limited resources to help these people. And if this is not a humanitarian tragedy, what is? You have to take into consideration the Israelis throw leaflets over these villages, ask them just to evacuate the places. And after they start to evacuate in convoys, and this is on record, for the past few days, all we have had is convoys being hit again and complete families killed. Now, what is a humanitarian problem if this is not one? I don't know.
Would you say that the international community might be able to do anything to bring justice to the situation where there might be atrocities or war crimes?
There is no international community, ma'am. There is only one international community. The government of the United States is the only country that can impress on Israel to stop its shelling. Instead of doing that, what we hear is the United States is equipping the Israeli army with smart bombs. Now, what can I say?
Hanna Anbar of the Daily Star in Beirut, Lebanon. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Okay, good luck.
And we certainly wish Hanna Anbar and all of the staff at the Daily Star of Lebanon good luck as well. We close with a story that was published in the Daily Star today, written by Stephen Collinson, who covered the Rome talks for Agence France-Presse. He writes, quote, "A despairing Lebanese Prime Minister Fayyad Sinoura asked whether war-cursed Lebanese were children of a lesser god after leaving crucial talks without an endorsement for an immediate ceasefire. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice stood quietly beside him as Sinoura launched into a tirade against Israel and delivered a moving eulogy to the Lebanese he said were dying every day." Earlier, writes Stephen Collinson, in the closed-doors meeting of the International Conference on the Lebanon Crisis, Sinoura asked, "What future, other than one of fear, frustration, financial ruin, and fanaticism, can stem from the rubble? Is the value of human life less in Lebanon than that of citizens elsewhere? Are we children of a lesser god? Is an Israeli teardrop worth more than a drop of Lebanese blood? Can the international community continue to stand by while such callous retribution by the State of Israel is inflicted upon us? Is this what is called legitimate self-defense?" In the press conference, Sinoura acknowledged that Israel had a right of self-defense after the Lebanon-based Hezbollah militia captured two of its soldiers earlier in July, launching the offensive. But he said its actions were disproportionate. Israel was not present at the conference, but other leaders also spoke out in sympathy for the Israeli civilians cowering under the rain of Hezbollah missiles since the conflict erupted. And that was quoting Stephen Collinson. You can read his piece online at dailystar.com. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. Talk Nation Radio is produced in the studios of WHUS Radio at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. WHUS.org to listen live every Wednesday at 5 p.m. TalkNation.org and TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts and discussion. Our music is by Fritz Heed. FritzHeed.com.